everyone, and welcome to the third episode of the Art of Volunteering podcast. Today I'm joined by Leo and Mike, and I would like to let them introduce themselves.
Leo? Hey, hi everyone. My name is Leo. I'm from Colombia. I'm 26 years old. I study psychology, and I'm actually volunteering right now in the Red Cross of Belgium in an asylum seeker center. Yeah, since September 2020.
What's about you, Mike?
Hey guys, I'm Mike. I'm 24 years old and I come from Belgium and I want to volunteer in Vietnam.
Okay, so this episode is going to be a bit more focused on the Red Cross. So Leo, would you care to tell us what you do?
Well, basically it is a asylum seeker center, as I was explaining you. When people have to fly from their countries because there's like a difficult situation, or like they cannot live anymore there, they can ask for international protection. So they come to Belgium, they report themselves to the foreigner's office and say that they want to start a process to get the international protection. And immediately after, they are sent to one of these centers. Right now, there are 23 centers just in the French-speaking zone of Belgium, the Wallonie, and I work in one of them. So basically, it's that we give them all of what we call material help, which is like they can live in the center, they receive the food in the center, or what they need for like cleaning, or what they need for like satisfy all their basic needs, and also of course some psychological assistance, social assistance, legal assistance, medical assistance, like everything that they actually could need during the process, it's given by the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I would like to ask if, as an outside view of all of this that's happening in Belgium, if you had like any idea or if there is any publicity in terms of these centers.
I knew it exists, but not the details.
Do you think it should be more prevalent to know as a Belgian society to know about like these centers and to give them more publicity?
It depends where you live in. Like, I live in the village and it doesn't matter. Probably in the city it's more important.
Okay. So Leo, how was your first days in Belgium? How do you felt arriving there?
Well, first I arrived during the Corona time when it was like really still was really a really hard situation. It was like actually a mess. I was the first volunteer to travel. I don't know, from a miracle, I could actually talk directly with my embassy and directly with the airline, so I could come. So the first days were, of course, kind of, you know. Actually, now that I remember, during my first week, restaurants and pubs and cafes were open still in Belgium. Then, mm-hmm. After 1 week, the second wave hit Belgium, so the numbers were increasing like super rapid. So they said like, okay, we need to close everything. So basically, the first day, the first week, should I say, I could actually go out and mm-hmm. have things and stuff.
Yeah.
But then they closed everything, and it was also hard for the people living in the center to do it as well. So yeah, the first days were kind of chaotic, I would say, like to see the reaction. They were thinking that we would go back to the lockdown, like the strict lockdown and stuff. So it was like that. I mean, also like that's regarding the corona. But other than that, probably the fact that I already speak German, like it could actually help me a lot to understand how it works. And to interact better with my coworkers, with the team itself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was it. Also, like, you know, being the new guy, it's kind of challenging sometimes because you don't know how anything works. I should say that the rhythm of work in the center is really fast. Like, you have to, there are many things happening at the same time. We have right now 95 persons in the center in total from 25 different countries. We speak approximately 10 languages. So it is a rush every day. And we have to keep the routine so it doesn't stop, you know, so it doesn't. So yeah, the first days were like, wow, challenging, completely challenging.
Yeah. So I would like to shift the conversation now to with Mike, since he's also waiting to go into volunteering. How is feeling in terms of having to wait and all of that, and what he's doing to prepare to go to his experience in Vietnam?
I wait since July that Vietnam opens the borders. We cannot predict when it all happens, and in the meantime, I try learning Vietnamese and prepare for it.
For example, Leo already knew the language. Do you think you are at a level where you could go to Vietnam and speak in a medium level and get around?
No, I can't. I'm still learning the basics, like the alphabet and the tones. In Vietnam, you can go pretty far with English.
Actually,
French,
yeah,
you can actually do many things in Vietnam, right? They do speak French sometimes.
Yeah, but when the last time when I was in Vietnam, with English you come way more far than in French.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with the government when you can speak French it's better, but with other people you go English, it's all fine.
Actually, I would also like to ask, how is it the English in Belgium, since, if I'm not mistaken, it has two mother tongues, French and German, right?
In Belgium, we have three languages. The north, they speak Flemish. It's like Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
The south speak French.
Yeah.
And where I live, it's mm-hmm. the minority who speak German. It's 80,000 people.
Okay. And how is the level of English in Belgium, for example?
It really depends where you go. Like, the north, they speak perfectly English. The French part, it depends mm-hmm. who you are speaking. And where I live, it depends again with who you are speaking.
Okay.
Now,
because, for example, comparing to my situation, since I'm in the part that speaks both German and Italian, here their level of English is very poor, I would say, in terms of average. From the beginning, I realized that I really need to learn Italian to get around, or German, but it's easier Italian since I'm Portuguese, right? So I was like also wondering if for Leo, if he didn't know German at the time, if he would have to learn French as fast as possible, or German, or if he would be able to get around with English for some time.
No, I mean, to be honest, it would be a real challenge. Like right now, sometimes my German is good, but not that good when it comes to like social work and stuff. Like there are sometimes things that I want to explain that are really hard to explain, like with my German. Even though for the daily stuff, it's very okay. So
mm-hmm.
I try to use my English in those scenarios, and even though I mean it's even worse. Like they wouldn't understand me if I explained it in English. Sometimes I mean there are certain coworkers who speak English and can help them with translate if it's like something really difficult. So I think if I wouldn't if I wouldn't speak German, at least, then well, I don't know, it would be really hard to actually do all the stuff that I wanted to do and that I was achieved already, like working in the center. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you are also trying to learn French. How easy or how hard is for you, since you also your mother tongue comes it's yeah. Spanish, right? So it comes from the same root. How hard or how easy is it for you to understand French and to?
Well, grasp right it? Now I'm actually studying. I already achieved the B1 level in the European reference frame. I can read, it's really easy for me to read it, because it, of course, has a similar structure and some vocabulary as the mm-hmm. Spanish. So reading, I'm really okay with reading. And with listening, it's getting better. But when it comes to speak, it's the hard part. Because first, you have Spanish, it's pronounced differently, like it's really clear, you speak or just say everything that is written.
Mm-hmm.
With German, it's exactly the same. Everything that is written, you have to pronounce it, you have to say it, because it's there for a reason. English, the same thing. Well, sometimes it's kind of tricky, but it's fine. I also speak a little bit Portuguese, so it's basically the same principle. But when it comes to French, pronunciation and what is written, it's are two different worlds. I pronounce mm-hmm. when it comes to pronouncing French, I cannot do the pronunciation. I just pronounce as it is written. So it's a kind of a struggle, you know. And also my pronunciation is really like rough. It's not rough.
Yeah.
When it shouldn't be. So yeah, speaking is the hardest part. But I think I'll need to just keep doing it until it sounds like real French.
No, to be honest, I also feel the same for the Italian, as like Portuguese, European Portuguese is a very rough language compared to Brazilian Portuguese, for example. That's a very fun and high pitched language, and the same for Italian. So for me, when speaking Italian, also it's almost like I have to put another personality into it. Compared to when I'm speaking Portuguese. And I'll ask also, like, Mike, how are you, like, learning Vietnamese, like, without the roots of Latin, right? Because it differs completely, right?
In Vietnam, they use the Latin alphabet, so it's fine. My problem is with the different tones to get a deeper understanding. I just probably need to speak it, and yeah, I look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also feel the same. Now I think we are going to take a little break for 5 minutes for you guys. It will be just 1 second, and in the second part we are going to talk a bit more about Red Cross and what. Welcome, everyone, to the second part of the Art of Volunteering podcast. This part, we are going to talk a bit more about Leo's work. And the first question I would like to ask is a bit like, how is your daily routine?
Well, first of all, there are, of course, routinary tasks that we have. Basically, are like community work. It's like basically cleaning, taking out the trash, cleaning the doors right now because of Corona. All of the doorknobs are cleaned every day, twice per day, with disinfectant and stuff. So that's what we call community work. It's not done by us. It's done by actually the residents in the center. But we are in charge of basically delegating the tasks, you know. So what happens is every week they're given a contract, or like a internal contract somehow, in which they know what they have to do and at what time. And we control that they are actually doing that, basically. And at the end of the week, they receive, of course, some money for doing that. So we are the responsible for controlling that they are doing the cleaning and the staff. And that's the community work. But also we have the food, the meals. So basically there is residents. There are residents who work in the breakfast, in the lunch and in the dinner. For the breakfast, it's basically one washes the dishes, the other is serving the breakfast that comes from the big kitchen. We have a big kitchen in the basement, and it's not operated by the Red Cross. It's operated by a contractor that we have. So they actually come and cook downstairs, then send the food upstairs where the restaurant is. And we're basically in charge of being in contact with the kitchen. So through an elevator, through on charge, we say, like, do we need more bread, or if we need, I don't know, food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
we also have the meals, a part of the community work. And it's, you know, the three meals of the day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So we also have residents work there by either serving the food or and washing the dishes and cleaning the staff. So we control that, and we also have a big kitchen downstairs where they actually cook. It's not operated by the Red Cross, but by a contractor we have. So we're the communication with, we're the point of communication between the restaurant and the kitchen. So we ask the food in the month charge, or like the, I don't know, if we need more bread or more food. But also we have like teams within the center. One of the teams is basically they call it polyvalent, which is basically they're up for everything. They're in charge of like the basic needs of the residents in terms of if they don't have internet, and then how can we fix it? If they need an appointment, if they need anything that is available for them in the center, they're like checking on them. And we have a small reception where the residents can come and like ask for their staff. That's also basic task that we do. So it's basically that, like, granting them all what they need on the daily routines. That's the polyvalent. There is also the MENA team, which is my team, basically. I work with MENA, which is basically in English would be something like foreigner underage without accompaniment, something like that. Which is basically boys and girls younger than 18 years old that come to Belgium without anyone else, like just them, pretty much alone. So that's basically the team is responsible for all their needs, which is like if they have to go to school. So we talk with the school director. If they needed a medical appointment, we go with them to the doctor and stuff. Like we're responsible for their needs on a daily basis, but of course, including the school, the doctor, the clothing, the activities, the like everything that a teenager would need. And I'm part of that team. They're called référent, which is basically the reference that the teenagers have in terms of like how they should get into the Belgian society. So that's pretty much it. Then we have the social office. They're basically in contact with the lawyers and staff. We have the medical office, so they're in contact with the hospital here in Eupen. And we also have let's say a doctor's office, which is exclusively for the Red Cross. So they don't send the residents directed to the hospital. They go first to a medical check in this office, and then if the doctor in that office says like, yes, this is something serious, then they go to the hospital. So basically there is a whole chain of command, and it's really well organized. Yeah. How to and when to do something. We're based on something that we call procedure. So it's processes that we follow within the center. It's really well organized. All the rules are written. Mm-hmm. In case of something, then you have all of the what ifs. So what if the person is bleeding, then there's one process. What if the person needs internet, there's a process. What if the person, and so on, so on, so on. So that's pretty much.
How does it work with the internet and the other things?
I have a legal responsible person in Belgium, but it is not the referent. It is a different person. It's called the tutor, and they are the legal tutors of the minors. So basically they are the ones legally responsible for them as if they were their parents. So based on the law, they cannot buy or they cannot sign any contract because they're underage. So basically the tutor has to do it for them. So if it's Wi-Fi, it is a right to have it. So like connectivity, actually. So the center, of course, has a Wi-Fi structure for them. We give them the Wi-Fi every time, like from the very beginning they arrive in the center. But if they wanted like a SIM card or a contract so they can have data and go out and have the internet, they have to ask the tutor. So the tutor buys a SIM card and signs a contract for internet, and then that number and that SIM card goes to the minor, but it is it's property of the tutor. And so many things like that. Like, as underage, they cannot sign any contract. You know? So that's it. So for mobile internet, they have to go to the tutor. For Wi-Fi, they do have, of course, Wi-Fi from the very moment they come in the center to stay connected. Because it's really important for us that they can have a way to communicate with their families sometimes. So they do have access to that immediately.
I would ask, like, it's basically like a whole society built around the Red Cross, right? And like, how do you perceive that society inside?
Well, that's precisely what it is. It is a micro society. We do have a micro economy, even in this country. In terms of the cleaning products, they have right to get it, of course, once per week. But it was kind of hard to manage it at the beginning, so they created a system in which they give them every Tuesday a certain amount of jetons, a certain amount of tokens, like plastic tokens, like the ones that you use to play poker or stuff. And on Wednesday, they can actually go to a certain space that we have adapted in the center to buy what they need for cleaning products, like, you know, deodorant or shampoo or soap or like to clean the floor, to wash the dishes. Like, we have a small store over there and they can go and buy it. So even economy somehow we have within the center, and I think it's actually kind of amazing to see how they live together based on all the different religions, all the different cultures that we have. It is extremely enriching, at least in many regions, because it's not only the country. So it's for me extremely amazing, and they also get along really well.
Does the kids decide on which school they go?
No, then that's not the teacher. I mean, it's really weird, even for me right now, how complicated it is. Like the relationship with the boys. Right now we have 22 boys, all boys. So in terms of the school, we're in charge of the scholarization. That's the actual name of it. So we decide somehow which school is free. We have right now 5 schools that work together with the Red Cross to actually get all of the boys in school. Two of them, not one of them speak, it's a German school, and 4 of them are in French. Basically, when they come to school, they don't get into the regular school, because of course the education level might differ a lot. So they go to an introduction class, in which they learn how to write, how to read. It's not because they cannot do it, it's because, well, most of the boys come from Afghanistan with a different, completely different language, completely different alphabet, completely different everything. So they have to restart learning how we write, like in the Western countries somehow. So ABC and stuff. And once they have achieved a certain level of French or German, and also mathematics and sports, like they just see 4 classes. They see language, mathematics, sports, and one that is basically how to adapt to Belgian society. So the history and stuff, like really simple.
Yeah.
Once they have achieved a certain level in language, they can go to other classes, more specialized, like start like getting to, you know, like into the actual, the normal education
into
system.
The normal.
But there's also there's also technic schools in which they can do the, like let's say this onboarding school, but also the they learn how to work with wood, for instance, or electromechanic stuff, so they can work with autos. It's like, it's basically it.
The technic school, is it in German Lehre, like a dual teaching, 2 days school, 3 days work?
Okay, the Ausbildung, by doing, so you have 2 days of class and 3 days of working, and you also get paid for that. Is it like that?
Exactly, I think.
Yes, exactly. The first year get around $250.
Yeah, exactly. No, they. I mean, I'm not really sure if they can apply for that, because basically what happens with this is that they do have to have a good level of in the language.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, there are really few that could actually, you know, fit in those positions. Sometimes one of the struggles, and this is a personal opinion, one of the struggles that we are having right now is that most of them come from Afghanistan, and just to put it in numbers, 22 out of the 22 that we have, 18 come from Afghanistan. So we just have 4 that are not that are not part of a big group that they already established, and they speak the whole day in Pashto, which is their mother tongue. So after school, they don't have any like stimuli to actually go and speak French or like you know, German or anything else. Even with us, they try to speak with us, but just the basic stuff. And yeah, we at the end of the day, we know exactly what they mean and what they need, so we don't actually demand them to speak clearly to us, just like, okay, I understand, I give you, or like, I understand, I go with you, or I give you your answer. But it's not like a continuous immersion in the French or German language, so they could speak. So to achieve the level enough to go to this kind of programs, I think they still need to like learn a lot before they can actually apply to that.
Do you feel that that lack of immersion in the language could be a detriment in the future of not completely getting into the culture?
It's one of the struggles. There is another office over here that is called Info Integration, which is basically that they help, they give information and they help the people with to integrate into society. It's a service they can access when they have the positive status. So they already are under international protection. Like an afterword of what they had in the center, but more like assistance. Like, okay, you can go this. I can help you find a job if you cannot do it. I can, well, many different things. It's like their functions in Info Integración. But and one of the things that they were telling us once that we had a meeting was precisely that. Like, we're worried because sometimes the MENAs go out of the center, got the international protection status and stuff. They go out, and because of the language, it's their chances to get a job, their chances to get like other forms of education, or like, you know, even enjoy their stay in Belgium, it's affected because of the language, because they cannot go out and buy something, or like, you know, so it is a struggle, it is hard, but it's also kind of, I mean, based on the numbers, based on the statistics that I've saw during the last months, basically the number one nationality that we're right now receiving in the centers in terms of MENA, it's basically 80% of them are from Afghanistan. So there's no way that it could be, you know, like they're gonna, it's not only happening in our center, probably it's happening in all of the centers because most of the boys are from Afghanistan. So this mixture, it's not possible to actually mix them with other boys and girls to achieve like probably more immersion and more language knowledge. So we have to see.
So it becomes harder to make them want to learn the language itself. And as you said, they are still underage, so they probably don't realize that they actually should try to speak in French or German, but they go for comfort, that being
Pashto.
What did you say was the language again?
Pashto, yeah.
The name? Pashto. Si. Yeah. So they
prefer they stay in their comfort zone, and they just
right.
Another thing is that they're really kind of proud of the Afghan. So when you tell them that, like, do not how to say it. Like, they're proud of speak Pashto, they're proud of their nationality, they're proud of their country and stuff. They have really high, like, national feeling. When you say, like, hey, you speak to me in French, or hey, you speak to me like this or like that, or like, you know, they don't listen to you. You know, they even have, like, flag hung on in their rooms or...
Yeah.
So that's another thing on top of it. You know, they sometimes, I think, and again, it's my personal opinion, I think they still don't get, like, the dimension of that they're here now. You know, like, they have to do a new life here. So,
yeah. Yeah. It also becomes extra hard when they are still young and without the background of having to realize these decisions, right? And the fact that you have to learn a new language, or it's better for you to learn a new language, doesn't mean that you are going to lose your roots. It just means that you are going to add to your roots and to create a new you, basically. But sometimes it's hard to
definitely
understand that.
Based also on the religion and some other, like, stuff, you know? That's something extra that it's kind of hard. They're Muslim, of course. And
sometimes they refer to us as haram, which is basically sinners. You know, like we don't live the way we're supposed to be living. So, you know, like drinking alcohol for them is it's a sin, and we drink alcohol here in Belgium a lot. So sometimes if we tell them like, hey, you better do this or that, I've heard comments like, you shouldn't be telling me what to do or what not to do because you don't know actually how to live. Because you're a sinner. You know? You're haram. So it's like,
yeah.
Okay. What can I do for you? How can I help you if you don't believe what I'm telling you?
Yeah, yeah.
Because your religion tells you that I don't know how to live. It's right now we're about to start Ramadan, and it's a generalized feeling in my team that it's gonna be hard because these days are kind of like super important for them. Mm-hmm. So we have to be extremely respectful first of all, but second, they also behave differently during these days, and it's more challenging. So I'm just looking forward to see how it is, and yeah, that's it. But you see, it's a mixture of things. So you have to basically start. How to say it? Like a step by step with them. You have to go like disarming all of the prejudices that they have, all of the you know, the way they see their lives, and so you can actually get deeply into them and say like, come on dude, you can't do it,
to talk with them,
you're here for a reason, or like you can improve in this or that way. Yeah,
so thank you everyone. I think we are going to close off this episode. Any last words, Mike?
Thanks that I could be here.
No, that was great. That's it. I'm just extremely happy that I had this chance to know and to learn all of what I just talked about. Because, of course, in Colombia, I wouldn't have the chance to so deeply how hard and how intense could be the feelings that this may cause, like, migration and stuff. So I think it's great for my experience. It's great to learn, and basically the aim of what Glovers and what the art of volunteering is to share those experiences. So it's great.
And it was also great to hear you. So everyone, thank you for listening. Next episode is going to be without me as the host. It's going to be a very interesting episode. It's going to be how girls travel alone. And thank you, and have a nice day.
Yeah.